Good morning, everyone. I learned something this week. This is called vertical drinking. And it's legal, apparently. We're starting a new series this morning called The Awesome Power of Vision. And it seems like a good time to start a series like this as we're continuing to emerge from all the restrictions that we've been living with and all the challenges, the fears and anxieties that we've had over the last 20 months or so. It just seems quite timely to focus on vision and purpose for ourselves as individuals, for our families, for our church. The Bible says that where there is no vision, the people perish. And that's certainly been my experience, that organizations and churches, even individuals who don't have a clear vision and don't know where they're going and don't know what the purpose is, don't achieve very much at all, soon fade away and don't make much impact. Chief executive of Barclays Bank has been looking at his history, and he says that if you look back to the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, immediately after that, the whole world went into what was called the Roaring Twenties. And his prediction is that there's such pent-up demand, consumer demand, and we're also dying to get out there and do things that we're in for another Roaring Twenties as we go through the 2020s. That we're all going to want to travel more, we're all going to want to work harder, we're all going to want to develop technology and invent new things, and it's going to be an amazing decade. And lots of commentators have picked up on this and are saying, yeah, that's what's going to happen. I'm not so sure that the signs are very good for that. There was an Ofcom report came out this week that said, on average, we're all spending 43 minutes more entertaining ourselves on screens of one kind or another than we did a year ago. 43 minutes more. And that takes the total to 5 hours and 40 minutes per day on average that we're spending in front of screens for entertainment, not for work. So that's a third of waking hours spent entertaining ourselves. That doesn't sound like the way to get the Roaring Twenties going. That doesn't sound like the way we're going to invent new things and develop new technology and really move forward. And it seems to me that there's a risk that as we emerge from all the restrictions, that we can just kind of settle for a quieter life. You know, spend more time in the garden, spend more time in front of the telly. And it's important to spend time with families. You think, well, is there a problem with that? And I would say, yeah, I think there is. I think for Christians, there's a problem with that. Because God did not put me on this planet to watch Barchester and to watch Strictly and to watch Love Island or any of that. That's not what God put me here for. God didn't call us to sit staring at a screen when there's a world out there, a world of need and a world that needs to hear about Jesus. God called us to be disciples, to boldly go wherever he sends us, not to entertain ourselves like the dance band on the Titanic. If you were here last week, or you maybe managed to catch up online, I realize as soon as I say that, I'm kind of contradicting myself, but anyway. You'll have heard the message that Eric brought last week, the last message in our series looking at the Beatitudes, and we were thinking about these words of Jesus. God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. And Eric said, when you hear those words, you don't really want to hear them. You know, you kind of wish Jesus didn't say that there's going to be persecution. And certainly, I mean, it's only a fool who would invite stress or pain or persecution into their life and who would actually, you know, want to invite that in. But, you know, I wonder if anybody else is like me and you listened to those words last week and something stirs inside. Or you read about the biblical characters who did great things for God and often faced great persecution. And there's just that stirring. Or you read the biographies of the great Christians through the centuries who've done amazing things for God, amazing things for the kingdom, who've gone all over the world sharing the gospel of Jesus, often at great personal cost, and something inside excites you and thinks, I want a piece of that. Something says, I want to live a life like that, a life that counts for something. I want to serve God. I want to see the church grow. I want to build the kingdom. I want to be where the battle is. Am I the only one who feels like that? I don't think so. I hope not. I hope not. You know, in the UK, we have the three defence forces. We have the Army, the Navy, and the RAF. In America, they've got a fourth one. They've got the Marines. And in America as well, they often go to schools and recruit from the schools. So four guys, all in their very smart uniforms, turned up at this school in America to do their recruitment. They were speaking at an assembly. And the Army guy got up and said, if you join the Army, you'll get to see the world. We'll take you all over the world. You'll learn new skills. You know, we'll make you the best that you can be. If you're interested in finding out more about the Army, I'll be at that desk over there. Come and see me at the end. And the Navy guy got up and he said, we've just taken delivery of our brand new warships, the most advanced warships on the planet. And you can be part of that. We'll train you and you'll go all over the world in these warships. If you want to join the Navy, I'll be at that desk over there. And the RAF guy said, we've got the most advanced fighter jets in the world. You just don't get better in this technology. We'll teach you to fly or we'll teach you to be a navigator. You know, if you want to find out more about the Air Force, I'll be over there. And the guy from the Marines got up and he looked around and he said, I've been watching you guys. All sitting there fidgeting away, not really listening, not really very interested. I don't think you've got what it takes to be in the Marines. I really don't. But if any of you think you want to give it a go, well, you can come and see me at the end. And you can guess what happened at the end, where the biggest queue was. Because there's something inside us that says, yeah, I want to be where the battle is. I want to make a difference. I want my life to count for something. So as we begin this series on vision, today's message is called Facing Your Future with Faith, Not Fear. And it's only an introduction today to the series, but I want to set the scene and show you that the power of vision in our lives, a power to give us focus, to give us purpose, to inspire us perhaps to shut down some of these screens and get busy for the kingdom. And I want us to look at the Bible, Acts chapter 25, and it's the account of Paul defending himself and defending the gospel before the king, before King Agrippa. Paul had been arrested because the crowds had been stirred up against him. It wasn't at all clear that he'd done anything wrong, but he was wrongly accused, and the king wanted to hear from this man. Paul was being wrongly accused and he was being persecuted, but this is a man with a history. If you know the story of Paul, then you'll know that he himself was a persecutor of Christians. He was arresting and imprisoning followers of Jesus. He took that job extremely seriously. But one day, all that changed for Paul. And that's what we read about here. So he's speaking to the king and he says, one day, on my way to Damascus, armed as always with papers from the high priests authorizing my action, right in the middle of the day, a blaze of light outshining the sun, poured out of the sky on me and my companions. Oh, King, it was so bright. We fell flat on our faces. Then I heard a voice in Hebrew, Saul, Saul, why are you out to get me? Why do you insist on going against the grain? I said, who are you, Master? The voice answered, I am Jesus, the one you're hunting down like an animal. But now, up on your feet, I have a job for you. I've handpicked you to be a servant and witness to what's happening today and to what I'm going to show you. I'm sending you off to open the eyes of the outsiders so that they can see the difference between dark and light and choose light. See the difference between Satan and God and choose God. I'm sending you off to present my offer of sins forgiven and a place in the family, inviting them into the company of those who begin real living by believing in me. And they listened to this. What could I do, King Agrippa? I couldn't just walk away from a vision like that. I became an obedient believer on the spot. I started preaching this life change, this radical turn to God and everything it meant in everyday life, right there in Damascus, went on to Jerusalem and the surrounding countryside, and from there to the whole world. So Paul explains how Jesus transformed him from being a religious terrorist who was out to murder Christians to become a Christian missionary. That's a pretty big U-turn. And he details this vision for his life that Jesus has given him. And then he said, how can I walk away from a vision like that? So through this series, I'd really like us to get to a place where you're able to say the same thing one day. And, you know, maybe when you stand before God and give an account of your life and you want to be able to say, I fulfilled the vision that you gave me for my life. How could I have walked away from a vision like that? There's a couple of really important things that I don't want us to miss here. And the first is that God called Paul personally. It was a vision for his life. This was his life purpose. This was what God wanted Paul to do, and no one else could do it. It was a unique calling for Paul. That's the first thing. And the second thing to notice is that Paul was a scumbag. You know, he described himself as the worst of sinners. He arrested and beat up Christians. He threw them in jail. He oversaw the brutal murder of Stephen, the first Christian martyr. Now, both those things, I think, are good news. Here's why. Because, firstly, God has a purpose for your life and for mine, a unique purpose, a vision that he will reveal to you for your life of what he wants you to do for him and for the kingdom. And only you can do it. If you decide to watch Netflix instead, it won't get done. And the second thing is, we're all scumbags. Many of us know that. Most of us know that. If we stop to think long enough, we all know that. That we can't match up to our own standard. We've got some dirty secrets that we just hope stay as secrets. You know, we're not the people we would really like to be. But this is good news, because God called a scumbag like Paul and changed him. When he encountered Jesus, he changed. He changed that day, and Jesus went on changing him for the rest of his life. And God does the same to us. And many of us have had that experience of an encounter with Jesus Christ, and he's changed our lives, and he's going on changing us, bit by bit, changing us to be more and more like Jesus. And he's giving us a calling to go and to change the world. So this morning, I want us to look at a second passage. I want us to go back to the Old Testament, and it's a story that involves Moses and the Jewish slaves who'd been freed by God from 400 years of slavery in Egypt. And God had promised these slaves a homeland of their own. He calls it the Promised Land. I'm going to set you free from Egypt. I'm going to send you to the Promised Land. It represented the future. It represented their inheritance that God wanted them to enjoy. And it would become the land of Israel. So they've gone through the Red Sea. They've crossed the desert, and they come to the edge of the Promised Land. And Moses chooses 12 men to be like an advance party. In many translations of the Bible, they're called spies, to go and spy out the land, to go on a kind of a vision trip, a fact-finding mission. And Moses says, go into that new land, and you know, this land represents our future. I want to know everything about it. Find out everything you can. Find out what it's like. See what you can see and come back and report. And we find the story of this in Numbers 13 and Numbers 14. And this is Numbers 13, verse 17. Moses gave the men these instructions as he sent them out to explore the new land. Go northward through the Negev into the hill country and see what that land is like. Find out whether the people living there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? Do the towns have walls? Are they unprotected? How's the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there many trees? Enter the land boldly and bring back samples of the crops you see. Now, why is Moses doing this? I think it's because Moses was a great leader, and he knew that people first needed to have a vision before they would be willing to advance forward. They needed to know what the goal was. Anyone who's going to succeed has to first understand the goal. Everything that's been accomplished in history has first been imagined in someone's mind. Everything. Everything you've done of any note in your life, you've first dreamt of it. You've imagined it and pictured it in your mind. If you're going to achieve things, you first need to have a vision of it. So the spies went up and explored the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob near Lebo Hamath. Going north, they passed through the Negev and arrived at Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshaiah, and Talmiah, all descendants of Anak lived. The ancient town of Hebron was founded 7 years before the Egyptian city of Zoan. When they came to the valley of Eshcol, they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, so large that it took two of them to carry it on a pole between them. They also brought back samples of the pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol, which means cluster, because of the cluster of grapes the Israelite men cut there. After exploring the land for 40 days, the men returned to Moses, Aaron, and the whole community of Israel at Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran. They reported to the whole community what they had seen and showed them the fruit they had taken from the land. That all sounds pretty promising. Really impressive crops. Moses said, go and find out. Find out how good this land is. Bring back some samples. They've done that. They've come back and it's all very promising. But there's a problem, and the problem has to do with vision. Because there were 12 spies, and two of the spies, Joseph and Caleb, looked at the future, looked at this promised land with eyes of faith. The remaining 10 spies looked with eyes of fear. And it totally changed the direction that God's people were going to go in. I want to contrast that today as we look forward to a post-pandemic future. Are you looking forward with eyes of faith or eyes of fear? Because it will make all the difference. All the difference. This story shows us what happens when your vision of the future is based on fear instead of faith. There's five traps that these 10 spies fell into, and the danger is we would fall into these traps as well. So very quickly, I'm going to give you these five traps. When I look at the future with fear, firstly, I overemphasize the negative. This was the report to Moses. We entered the land you sent us to explore. It is indeed a bountiful country, a land flowing with milk and honey. Here is the kind of fruit it produces. But the people living there are powerful, and their towns are large and fortified. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. When you overemphasize the negative, you worry that the glass is always half empty, instead of being happy and grateful that there's still something in the glass. We should look at what we have left, not at what we've lost. Now, life is full of negatives, you know. There are lots of negatives that we have to contend with in life. Not all news is positive, but we get to choose what we're going to focus on. We get to choose whether we're going to focus on the positive or the negative. So the spies brought back this conflicting news. Two who had eyes of faith brought back a positive. They focused on the positive. The 10 who were approaching with eyes of fear brought back this negative news. I think that's probably about the right ratio in our news today. For every one positive news story, there's five negative ones. And actually, experts tell us that negative news spreads about 10 times quicker than positive news on social media, and we probably know that from our own experience. So I overemphasize the negative. Second thing, I pay too much attention to what other people are doing. If I look at the future with eyes of fear, I pay too much attention to what other people are doing. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites live along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea and along the Jordan Valley. So what are they saying here? They're basically saying that there's not enough. There's no space for us. There won't be anything left for us. All the good land has been taken by all these other tribes. There's no room in this promised land. There aren't enough resources for anyone, for everyone. And if we look at the future with eyes of fear, then we develop that kind of scarcity mentality. And you start seeing all the good experiences are gone. All the good jobs are taken. All the good houses have already been bought. All the good husbands are already married. You know, we pay too much attention to what other people are doing. Third thing, I underestimate the abilities God has given me. Caleb tried to quiet the people as they stood before Moses. "Let's go at once to take the land," he said. "We can certainly conquer it." But the other men who had explored the land with him disagreed. "We can't go up against them." To seeing life with eyes of fear causes you to bury your talents. The men who had gone with Caleb said, "We can't. We can't. We can't go up against them." They're underestimating their own ability. And, you know, often in life, the people who say, I can't, and the people who say, I can, are both right. Because it so often becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you approach life with an attitude, I can't do that, I can't possibly do that, well, you won't. You won't achieve it. But those who can look forward with faith and focus on their vision with faith, say, with God on my side, I can do that. And it becomes self-fulfilling. If you've got a vision based on fear rather than faith, it's going to limit what you do. You're going to miss opportunities. You're going to waste the talent that God has given you. And we set ourselves up for that kind of self-fulfilling and self-defeating predictions. So maybe there's a question there for us at the moment. You know, having lived through what we've lived through for the last 20 months, what is your attitude right now? How are you seeing yourself? Are you looking at your own abilities as, I'm adequate, I can do this? God has given me certain abilities and I want to use them, and I believe that he will be on my side and he will enable me to use those gifts for the advancement of the kingdom. The spies, with their fear-based vision, saw themselves as inadequate. They said, the land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers. And that's what they thought too. You see what they're saying there? We see ourselves as insects waiting to be devoured. We felt like grasshoppers. That's a pretty pathetic self-image, isn't it? You know, we're just insects. We're bugs and they're going to squash us. We're going to end up smacked against the windscreen. The fourth thing, if I look ahead with fear rather than faith, I infect others with my negativity. Verse 32 says they spread a bad report about the land that they had explored. They didn't just keep this to themselves. This is what happens when you become afraid. You start talking rubbish. You start talking negatively. You start complaining. You start moaning. Did you notice how many conspiracy theories popped up during the pandemic? I mean, you know, it was ridiculous. More conspiracies in a single year than we've had in decades. And there were many Christians falling for these theories too and sharing it all on social media. You know, why was that happening? Well, that happens when we hang out with the wrong people. That happens when we listen to the negative reports, when we approach life with fear and not with faith. We listen to the negative news sources and we buy into these conspiracy theories. Of course, we all know there are no conspiracies. It's just a group of people in the Pentagon who sit and make up all these conspiracy theories. And the final thing that happens if we look to the future with fear and not faith, I make myself miserable. And that's what happened. The whole community began weeping aloud. They cried all night. Their voices rose in a great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in Egypt or even here in the wilderness, they complained. They're having a full-blown pity party here. They're depressed. They cried all night. They're complaining. Why are they complaining? Because they're scared. Because they're looking forward with fear, not faith. And they start questioning their leaders. We wish you hadn't led us here. You're doing a lousy job of leading us. I thought about that and thought of all the things I've been saying about politicians and those who lead us during the pandemic. And it's, you know, it comes in part out of that fear of what's happening and the anxiety about what's happening. You start questioning those who've got the responsibility to lead. And they want to go backwards. They want to go back to the prior time, back to the way it was before. It would have been better for us to have died in Egypt, they said. And how often have you heard, can't wait to get back to the way life was? I don't remember people being deliriously happy the way life was before the pandemic. You know, what is this wonderful life that we all want to go back to? It was a life full of problems. It was, But we'll go back to Egypt because it's safe. We know what we're getting, and we'll just die there. Instead of looking ahead with faith and saying, there's a promised land God's got for us. There's a vision God has got for us that I need to grasp with faith. So the antidote to all this is what we're going to look at over the next few weeks. But in one sentence, the antidote is you need to develop a life vision that is about faith, not about fear. You need to see with eyes of faith. And there are two guys who were like the minority report here, Caleb and Joshua. They were the only two who eventually got into the promised land. The rest of them died in the desert. God let them die. Here's what Caleb said, full of faith. He said, let's go at once to take the land. We can certainly conquer it. Let's do it right now. You defeat fear, not by arguing against your fears. You defeat fear with movement, by doing something, not by discussing it, not by focusing on it, but by opposing it, doing the thing you fear most. Psychologists say that's the way to overcome fears. If someone's got a fear of going in lifts, then they'll say, well, you need the way to overcome that fear is you need to get in that lift. So first you go and you stand and you watch people going in and out in that lift and you get used to it, you know, and you build up in that. And it is the way you overcome fears. I don't know what your greatest fear is. You know that George Orwell, 1984, and Winston and that story, his greatest fear was rats. So the room 101 was where the rats were. My greatest fear, and it's not very rational, is birds, especially in a confined space. That would be the worst thing. If a bird gets into our house, I am useless. You know, the things flapping about. It's only a sparrow, you know. And if I stop to think about it, I'm bigger than a sparrow. I can take on, you know. But I had an experience recently with this kind of bird. This is a buzzard. And there's some buzzards, they're very majestic birds, and there's some up just behind Allenton up in the trees there. And I was up there on my bike as one of my regular routes, and this buzzard was flying round and round, and it was really quite impressive until it decided to swoop down on me, and it flew alongside me, and I thought, oh, it's pretty brave getting close like that. And then it went round and it came down again. And it whacked me on the back of the head. I've got a big chunk out of my cycle helmet. And it's quite a common thing. There's a picture here. That's not me, but it's a common thing. These buzzards, when they're protecting their nest, they'll attack joggers who are going past or cyclists. And this is my greatest fear. I have never cycled so fast in my life as I did at that point. And then a couple of days later, I thought, I'll go out on my bike. And I didn't go that route. Now, you might say, well, that's sensible. You know, the bird's there and it's protecting its nest, you know. And a couple of weeks later, I'm thinking, am I never going to cycle past there again? So I decided to go. And as I was coming up to where I knew, you know, I know exactly where this spot is, there's the buzzard sitting on top of a telegraph pole. And it's squawking away and it's waiting for me. You know, you can tell it's waiting for me. And honestly, I thought, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to go back. But it's this thing. That is totally irrational. You know, a buzzard's a big bird, but, really, it's totally stupid. How am I scared of a bird, you know? So I had to go for it. I had to keep going. So when God calls us to a vision for the future, and when Jesus is there whispering, saying, there's persecution. This is not an easy road. No one said this is going to be easy. Nobody said there wouldn't be pain in the offering. We need to go for it. We need to go ahead with faith, knowing God is with us. But it's not going to be plain sailing. I'm not here to say, you know, you give your life to God and go all out for God and everything will be wonderful. That's not the history of Christian discipleship at any time. And it's still not the history today. Here's what Josh and Caleb said. He said to all the people of Israel, the land we traveled through and explored is a wonderful land. And if the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It's a rich land, flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord. And don't be afraid of the people of the land. They are only helpless prey to us. They have no protection. But the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. He's saying we're depending on the promise of God. Don't rebel, because God is on our side. One plus God is a majority. If God is for us, who can be against us? Now, sadly, the people chose to listen to the majority report. They didn't listen to Joshua and Caleb. And they all died in the desert over the next 40 years until a new generation grew up. And they were the ones who would be allowed to go to the promised land. And one of the saddest verses in the Bible is Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 19 that says this. So we see that they, the people who were the slaves that had been freed, they were not able to enter the promised land because of their unbelief. Because they looked at the future with fear and not with faith. And they didn't get the promised land. They didn't achieve what God had set out for them. So for us right now, as individuals, as a church, having been set free from our slavery, our restrictions, we have a chance to get up and go again. We have a chance to refocus our vision as individuals and as a church. And we have a choice. Are we going to look forward with fear, or are we going to go forward in faith, knowing that God has promised, I will be with you, I will never leave you. It might be tough, it might be hard, there might be persecution along the way, but I will never leave you. I will never abandon you. As we explore this over the next few weeks, my prayer is that God will embolden us to go forward with faith and to achieve what he has already planned for us. And he's a generous God, and he says, see, if you want to watch something on Netflix instead, yeah, you can do that. But you're going to miss out on the promised land. Let's pray. God, our Father, we thank you for choosing people like us to be part of your church and part of your kingdom. And it's amazing to us when we stop and think of what we are and who we are, that you would choose the likes of me, that you would first redeem us and then you would change us to be more and more like Jesus. We thank you for the example of Paul and so many Christians down through the centuries who we can look to and see that they were just like us with all their weaknesses and their failings, and some had terrible backstories, but you took them and you saved them. But you didn't just save them from their past, you saved them for a future. And our prayer this morning, Lord, is that you would complete the salvation you have begun in us, as you have saved us from our sin and forgiven our sin and given us a chance to live for your kingdom. Our prayer is you would save us for something, that you would reignite in us the vision that you have for us as individuals and as a church, and give us the courage to grasp that with faith and to see the promised land. In Jesus' name, amen.